Enlighten and strengthen, O Lord. Under the lofty vaults of the spacious hall, many people had gathered. Faces of different ages, nationalities, and destinies flitted here and there. In the front rows of the hall, chairs had been thoughtfully arranged for those who, due to health reasons, couldn't stand, and they were all occupied without exception. Hundreds of eyes were fixed on one person, carrying the mystery of great knowledge into their souls from the stage. Hundreds of ears eagerly listened to every word, afraid of missing something important, absorbing with their hearts everything the master uttered. The meeting with the great keeper of knowledge had been long awaited by each of those present. Driven by spiritual thirst, the disciples fervently sought the light emanating from the keeper. This light gave them hope, instilled confidence, and reverential awe. The all-encompassing love he bestowed filled the hall. In the stream of elevated emotions, new questions arose in the minds of the disciples, the answers to which they could only find here. Thus, a lovely, fair-haired girl decided to ask about the nuances of prayer.
Dear Master, I want to ask about prayer. Lately, it has become harder for me to pray. I used to have different ideas about God, and it was easier. Before, I thought that God was like a patron, with whom I felt safe and secure, and you could even ask for money. If needed, he would always give. But now, when I contemplate that God is within me and I am God myself, then praying and asking for something has become many times harder. Now it's as if there is a responsibility to myself, and I notice that in prayer, it's as if different parts of me address God, and this doesn't allow me to pray holistically. There's a feeling that these parts are waiting for a convenient moment to start manifesting. That is, sometimes I pray for the health of loved ones or for enlightenment, but then other desires, more earthly, material, seem to intrude into the prayer on their own. How does God's mercy manifest here? Should he help me develop the spiritual part and strengthen it?
These are very thoughtful reflections.
The sage noted with pleasure the spiritual state of the disciple.
The first thing we should focus on in prayer is which part of our being is praying at the moment. Very often our mind, like a swan, a crayfish, and a pike, pulls the cart in different directions. One part of a person wants spiritual development and strives for it, but at the same time, another part may want a fur coat or a bag of money. This is a normal phenomenon, and we need to learn to live with it and overcome it.
The master looked at the girl with understanding and love, and she asked a clarifying question with the same warmth.
So it turns out that each part of the mind prays for its specific needs?
Exactly. There are many personalities within a person, and which personality prevails at the moment will dictate what we will pray for. For example, a girl gets fixed on the false goal of passing exams, and like a zombie, she studies exam questions. Day and night, doesn't sleep, doesn't eat, torments herself. Then she takes a candle and rushes to the church to pray for a successful exam. But at another moment in life, the same girl may experience a surge of aspiration for holiness and pray for spiritual knowledge.
At that moment, the fair-haired beauty involuntarily flinched, remembering the heavy sleepless nights and attempts to cram material that turned out to be empty in her life. And she remembered the prayer and her fears with which she came to the church on the morning before the exam. She blinked in surprise and didn't understand whether the example given by the master was just a coincidence or whether this great man indeed saw through her. Fortunately, she didn't have to ponder over this for long, as the guru continued his explanations.
So it turns out that each part, each personality of a person prays for something of its own. When we pray, we always feel some weakness, a lack in ourselves of certain qualities and abilities we would like to possess. There is a need to invoke the help of higher powers. And in these desires, it's not always necessary to seek for the help of the Absolute. In some small worldly request, of course, the Absolute will not help. but some spirits will. Spirits exist on the vital level. They can hear our desires and fulfill them. All our earthly requests can be heard by spirits. But in order for someone to hear the prayer, it's always important to include the emotional aspect. If a person prays only with their mind, their prayer is weak, and no one will hear such a prayer. Therefore, prayer must be from emotions. There must always be a strong emotional background present. Prayer becomes effective only when emotions are involved. Only then can higher powers, spirits, demigods, maybe someone else, hear this prayer and help the person with something.
Great one. Tell me, then what should we ask God for? What is the primary assistance provided by God, by the spirits?
Asked another girl from the front rows, wearing large glasses. Through them, her brown eyes seemed even larger than they actually were, but it didn't ruin her charm.
The main thing to ask for.
Here the sage made a significant pause and surveyed the audience with a mysterious gaze. He kindly looked into the eyes of the girl and quietly, as if uttering a prayer at that moment himself, said,
"Give me some sense."
Everyone fell silent. In this simple word, there was a lot of appeal, a longing for consolation and mercy. For some, on the contrary, there was a desire to shout it out loud, as if the volume of the sound contributed to the degree of healing of the soul. But the master pronounced it in a whisper. This gave even greater sacredness and sensuality to what was said. Silence fell. No one expected the master to continue. Everyone savored the depth of this beautiful and important prayer word. After a few seconds, the keeper finally spoke, just as quietly, pausing between words.
"Because the greatest stupidity of a person is when he himself has come up with how it should all happen and demands that everything come to fruition exactly as he imagined it, or as foolish people have instilled in him, parents, friends, various fools, and a person begins to envision the imagined embodiment of his desire in detail. But in reality, when we desire something, we should pray, 'Give me some sense.'"
Here the sage emphasized and raised his voice.
"Because that's when God will show us how to act for the desire to come true in the best possible scenario. It's much easier that way. Otherwise, a person prays meaninglessly, wanting only their version to come true. They don't even suspect that there are dozens of other possible scenarios that could help them to realize what they want if it happens. But a person doesn't think about that. They don't think because there are certain attitudes that prevent them from thinking broader, considering other options, or simply because they lack mental activity. For example, a woman needs a raise. She needs to go to her boss and ask directly. But for some reason, such an option is not welcomed in society. And the woman starts to hesitate, afraid of rejection, afraid of condemnation from colleagues. All these social influences interfere, intimidate, and the person simply doesn't allow such a development of events, afraid to use these options. Therefore, the first thing we do when we pray for something is to pray, 'Give me some sense.' If we pray, we ask, 'Give me some sense,' and then we remain in such an open state, waiting for guidance on how to act. Then the right option should come in that state. And this prayer, 'Give me some sense,' will help us not to miss that option. A person becomes wiser in that moment. The power of God awakens within him, and he knows how he should act in this situation. Therefore, if we ask for reasoning in prayer, we must remain open and wait for the option that the spirits will offer us. If we follow and agree with these options, without fear, then the realization of the desire will surely come. But if we, like sheep, insist on our own, then nothing may come to fruition."
Keeper, may I give an example?
The girl in glasses suddenly straightened up, as if some important problem had just been solved for her. Her face expressed victorious confidence.
We would be glad to hear it.
The Keeper of Knowledge eagerly welcomed her initiative.
I would like to tell you about my sister, Nika. She always thought that her husband, Victor, should be a businessman. More precisely, she really wanted this. But she didn't understand that from the very beginning she needed to look for a man from the business environment. That's where she needed to pray to God. Give me some sense to understand where to find a suitable husband. Now I understand that the Absolute doesn't fulfill such requests, but the spirits could have helped her. But instead, she married an ordinary guy, a car mechanic. They studied together at the economics college before, and she thought he could still become a businessman. But he was always passionate about cars and started working in a car repair shop. He brought in little money, but didn't plan to do anything else. He was too lazy to start changing anything in his life and career. Even when his car repair shop went bankrupt and closed, he didn't go look for something better, but temporarily became a security guard at some warehouse. But my sister didn't give up and demanded that Victor open his own technical service station. She thought his passion for cars would be enough. But it was also necessary to consider that he had no management talents or business acumen. I now understand that instead, she should have prayed and asked the spirits for help to understand why she couldn't turn him into a businessman. But she kept squeezing tomato juice out of a lemon. She scandalized, humiliated her husband, tried to emotionally push him, thinking that this would change him. As a result, her husband tried to open a business, an auto spares shop, but only ended up losing all his clients. He couldn't manage the accounting, lost money, and the trust of decent people. He started drinking out of desperation. He descended to being a seller in a tobacco kiosk. Now they don't even have enough money to pay for the internet. I think that her husband will never be able to become a businessman, no matter how much she tries, no matter how many scandals and tantrums she creates. A cucumber cannot turn into a watermelon, as you wisely say. Am I reasoning correctly, Great One, that she needs to accept this? So, if Nika had prayed to the spirits, maybe they would have advised her to leave Victor and find another husband who would already be a successful businessman from the start. Maybe the spirits would have helped her find herself in such a situation or in such a place where she would meet such a man. In some expensive establishments where business lunches take place, for example, it seems to me that the spirits are even giving me a clue for her. But now, she is a hostage of her illusions and fear of public condemnation. She thinks that leaving her husband is very wrong, that people will speak ill of her for leaving her husband. She is very afraid of meeting new people and going on new dates. She's afraid that she won't be able to attract a businessman. After all, she has greatly deteriorated over the years with Victor. She hasn't taken care of herself. She's gotten used to pouring all her energy into tantrums. She dresses like a sloppy teenager, but looks like a sick old woman. And that's why she stays with Victor. This marriage torments both him and her. And they still have children, whose minds they deform.
The girl in glasses finished and exhaled. By speaking all this out loud, she seemed to have brought order to her thoughts about her sister, and she felt significantly relieved.
A very fitting real-life example. Thank you for sharing. We will pray for your sister to find the strength to turn to the spirits, and may they enlighten her and lead her to realization.
The master said caringly, blessing both girls, and then he concluded.
Therefore, a person must heed what the spirits say and begin to do what they command, even if it seems very difficult and scary. Give me some sense is the first thing to pray for because man is unreasonable. They don't understand what and how to do it. But the spirits know everything and will give us guidance. So we must seek their instructions and help. We must pray to them, investing emotions and diligence.
Suddenly a hand rose in the middle of the hall. The master quickly responded and allowed the question to be asked. It was a young man, no more than 27 years old, with long hair down to his shoulders, tucked behind his ears. He was timid and blushed. When his hand turned out to be the only one among the entire audience listening attentively to the keeper's speech, he immediately blamed himself for interrupting the great master. But an important question that arose in his mind made his hand obey and stay raised for a few seconds. The master saw the sincerity and ease of the young man, which were hidden behind his embarrassment, and he allowed him to speak.
Tell me, dear master.
The young man's voice, strong and deep, surprisingly didn't match his appearance to the audience.
If you pray, give me some sense and receive guidance on how to act, but for a long time can't bring yourself to do it. What do you do then? Pray, give me some sense again.
I was waiting for this question from you.
The master responded eagerly.
Once you have been enlightened, you must continue to pray. Strengthen. This is the next important prayer. Strengthen. To give strength, so that the spirits give energy, thanks to which we can follow the course of events proposed by them. Yes, this option may not always be easy. It may require a person to overcome their complexes, fears, anxieties, and influences. Perhaps they will have to do something they have never done before, and it will be rewarded. After we pray, strengthen, give energy, strength to follow this. The spirits help and direct inspiration, the energy of activity to the heart. Then a person begins to act. But water does not flow under a lying stone. Action is needed. Praying and sitting with folded hands, waiting for something to resolve itself according to the will of the spirits, won't work. So remember three important components.
Here, the master raised his voice, intentionally emphasizing it, to help the disciples to better remember the important theses. He raised his hand up, began to bend his fingers.
First,
the keeper bent his thumb to the palm.
Analyze what our personality is praying for at the moment, whether it's a top grade on an exam or health for a sick person.
The sage paused briefly to allow the disciples' minds to fix the knowledge they had received.
Second,
following the thumb came the index finger.
Always engage emotions in prayer to be heard. And third, after give me some sense, remain open. And after receiving guidance, pray, strengthen, and give strength. To be inspired to act and help fulfill your desire. These are the three key rules.
The keeper of knowledge kept his hand raised for some time. The audience was silent, absorbing the information they received, focusing on the master's hand. Such important points were particularly well remembered by them. After the master's hand was lowered, another one rose in the hall. A tall, elderly man, with gray hair, asked in a deep voice,
"Tell me, wisest one, if the spirits help us in everyday matters, then does God help in some lofty desires?"
"Yes, that's correct. God helps only in elevated state. The lower a person's desires, the lower level spirits assist them. If a person prays for more elevated desires, that is, not for themselves, but for helping others, selflessly and purely, then higher level spirits hear that desire and assist. But to seek God's help, one needs a very high intention. The prayer must be very deep emotionally, and the desire must be strong and associated with holiness. For example, if a person wants enlightenment, to be conscious, wants repentance, then the higher powers begin to contribute. Therefore, when a person prays for an A on an exam, one shouldn't expect the absolute and the infinite to lend a hand. Because the absolute doesn't notice such petty requests, they are not of interest to him and are just white noise in the background. However, some lower level spirits, demons, yes, they may assist in this. It's just a very funny goal, not serious, unnecessary. If a person prayed, "Give me some sense," they would understand that living rich and happy in college won't teach them that, because the teachers themselves don't know how to do it. They would realize that exam results and grades won't be remembered after a month. And why miss out on so many opportunities for development because of them? And a diploma is not a guarantee of success. Before entering college, it would be useful for a person to analyze how many successful people are without diplomas, and how many impoverished specialists with diplomas are around. If tuned into the higher, the spirits would advise them to study life, strive for the appropriate environment, for people who have already achieved something, know something, can share that knowledge. The spirits could enlighten them, and the person would go and do what's necessary. That's what you really need right now. And a diploma won't help in life at all.
The tall man who asked the question thanked the keeper for the detailed answer and asked him to answer another question.
I also wanted to ask you, Master, how to motivate oneself to pray. Often the desire to pray arises out of necessity when God gives us a good whack on the head. I mean, when something unpleasant happens. And when something good happens, we rarely pray in gratitude. How can we awaken emotions for prayer in ourselves so that we don't have to wait for trouble to pray? Can this be done through understanding?
Then there must be aspiration,
said the sage, in a heartfelt voice. He paused for a moment before continuing, and a mischievous spark ignited in his eyes. It usually happened when the spirits suggested something brilliant to him. The master suddenly, slowly rose from his seat, walked around behind his chair, and stood next to it, continuing his thought as he walked.
Why do we need suffering? Suffering is necessary for a person to become sensible.
At that moment, the master slightly spread the folds of his mantle and bent one leg, raising his knee high and falling silent. He stood still, like a flamingo, calmly gazing at the audience, maintaining silence. The disciples were puzzled. Some smiled, feeling keen interest in what was happening, simultaneously experiencing delight from the originality and non-triviality of the great keeper's whims. Some, on the contrary, tensed slightly from the master's unexpected actions, turned their heads, seeking support and explanations from other listeners. Eventually, after a few minutes, the closest disciples realized that they should imitate the master, and they froze, like leaden toy soldiers, standing on one leg. A wave of identical movement swept through the hall, and soon the entire audience turned into an army of one-legged guards, trying to stand still, resembling the sage. When this happened, the master closed his eyes and clasped his palms together on his chest. The disciples followed suit, staying in such a position for a long time was a serious test of coordination and endurance. After some time, many could not endure it and stood back on both legs, quietly lamenting about their lack of physical fitness or health. After several minutes, only a few
flamingos
remained in the hall, and the master finally opened his eyes and returned to his chair, smiling, pleased with the practice.
Well, was it difficult?
He asked with a sly squint.
I think I should explain something to you.
He continued, laughing. Everyone immediately exhaled from relieving the tension of uncertainty and felt an incredible surge of strength and energy. Meanwhile, the master continued, looking at the man who still hadn't received an answer to his question.
In ordinary life, when nothing happens, a person relaxes, becomes lazy, falls in a senseless state, doesn't move anywhere, degrades. That's why they need a push to start resurfacing.
The keeper's gaze shifted to the other listeners.
Like now, everyone has already relaxed, thinking, well, the master is saying something there, I can skip it a bit. I'll look around. I'll examine the temple, look at the patterns on the ceiling over there. And for your attention to be focused on my words, on the knowledge, I need to shake you up, bring you a little suffering.
The audience burst into laughter and nodded. The keeper gave them a few seconds to focus again on listening, and then continued.
It becomes difficult for God to reach a person, and strong emotional pushes, events are needed to shake and remind the person that they've sat in one place. That's when the Lord takes out his instructive stick to hit you on the head and bring a little suffering. Because suffering is a very effective method, isn't it?
The keeper smirked and gloated, surveying the audience.
He hit you on the head with a stick, and the person wakes up as if from a coma, starts thinking, what am I? Where am I? What am I doing wrong? Why does it hurt so much? I don't want it to hurt so much anymore. I'll go pray, ask God what I need to do. Let him enlighten me.
The sage pronounced these words in all the colors of his genius acting skills, amusingly portraying a person just waking up, quickly blinking his eyes and amusingly rubbing them from sleep. The audience chuckled at the Keeper of Knowledge's straightforwardness and artistry, who explained profound thoughts so simply and accessibly. They eagerly listened to every word and caught all the intonations. Meanwhile, the master continued in a serious tone.
One must be striving. If a person is inherently driven towards development and self-improvement, then such a stick will not be applied to them. It will be unnecessary. Such people themselves strive to follow the directions of higher powers, pray in time, and try to use any situation for their development. And in a senseless state, what else is there for God? Only to beat with a stick.
I understand, Master, thank you.
The man replied with a smile, and the hall applauded. These applause were an expression of their joy. People were happy to be here and absorb everything that the Keeper of Knowledge shared with his disciples, to feel for themselves the permanence of the truth that he conveyed to them. The next question was asked by one of the sage's close disciples named Nail. The young man had an exceptionally straight posture and a noble appearance. He practiced a lot, sought enlightenment, and dreamed of becoming one of the great Keeper of Knowledge's close followers.
Tell me, Great One, am I correct in understanding that during practices, when we utter strong phrases on the bells or gongs that help us, is that our drive? In other words, when we say on the gong, I want to help more, I'll die, but I'll help the master, I want to develop, etc. Are these our markers to remember and push ourselves in the right direction?
Yes, Nail, of course,
replied the master.
The main thing is to accompany each spoken phrase with strong emotions, to breathe life and meaning into each phrase, because if it's only said from the mind, it won't have any meaning. When strong emotions kick in, that's when the prayer happens. It's not even the words anymore, but the emotions you felt while uttering them. They guide and change us.
The grateful disciple bowed in response to the master's words and tried to send him a wave of happiness, the one he had absorbed from the keeper himself. When the sage turned his gaze back to the hall, several people raised their hands again. The master gave the floor to a young woman who was squeezed in a corner of the room. Her black hair was woven into a loose braid and fell over her shoulder, and from under her chiffon top, delicate, beautiful collarbones were visible. It would be fair to call her attractive and alluring. She had a very bright energy. The beauty began.
Tell me, Master.
And there was a slight Eastern accent in her speech.
Why is it that in one family, under the same upbringing conditions, children grow up as complete opposites? Some find a spiritual path, while others settle for spiritual poverty. There are many examples of this in my life. Is it some design of God or just coincidences?
The keeper paused for a few seconds, then answered.
It's because souls are born at different levels. For example, a soul that hasn't managed to gain spiritual experience yet, and a soul that has reincarnated multiple times, striving to become an angel. That's why people from the same family can be multi-level. Let me give you a personal example, my dear ones.
At these words, the disciples perked up and listened attentively. They especially cherished these rare examples that the master shared through stories about himself and his family. This way, they could fully feel the trust with which the Keeper of Knowledge addressed them. It was as if he allowed them to touch the Sacred Grail, his life experience which influenced his development and spiritual path.
For example, my brother and I are opposites. From a young age, I delved into spiritual development. He, on the other hand, was more inclined to lead a standard earthly life, dreaming of becoming a paratrooper, getting married, wanting to be like everyone else, listening to our mother and grandmother. So he got into all sorts of trouble. The dream of being an attractive paratrooper led him to Afghanistan, where he contracted typhoid fever and barely made it back home alive. All the girls ran away from him. He hastily got married, and his wife also didn't figure out who she was marrying. She demanded money from him. So he spent his whole life at the flea market, trading whatever he could find. But we started practicing yoga together. But his soul is always in some illusions and worldly entanglements, succumbing to the influence of ignorant relatives, the influence of an unreasonable society. So he and I are going in two different paths and directions. Fortunately, unlike my brother, I didn't absorb everything that our environment imposed on us. On the contrary, my brother was always inclined to listen to parents, relatives, friends, television, and anyone else. As a result, he became confused and indecisive. I, on the other hand, denied everything, didn't want to accept what was imposed on me.
The Keeper of Knowledge's noble face momentarily took on a sad expression, and then he continued.
Everything our parents told me, I didn't consider right. I didn't do much of what they suggested, doubted everything. I often asked them questions like, why? For what? What's the point? And very often didn't get reasonable answers. These answers didn't satisfy my curiosity, and I turned to spirituality to understand everything that interested me. On television, I noticed a lot of propaganda, advertising, hidden meanings. I saw the influence it had on people, saw that they wanted to make me a fool and didn't accept, refused ideas that were being pushed on me. Because my soul is of a different level, I can't perceive all of this anymore. I understand a lot and don't fall for such things. I reject all of it, don't accept it. And my brother, on the contrary, absorbed all of it. That's why he lived a bad life, couldn't accept the truth that I wanted to teach him. That's what I mean when I talk about souls of different levels.
Having seized a fortunate pause, a young man in the audience raised his hand. He was dressed in spacious orange clothing. The master recognized him as one of his disciples, one of those who often attended the seminars. The Great One gave him the opportunity to ask his question.
Tell me, wisest one, is the way life unfolds, whether successfully or not, whether you have a high intellect or not, how receptive you are to subtle matters and spiritual knowledge, does it all somehow depend on the astrological chart? Or does only the level of the soul influence it?
Yes, Igor. You asked a very timely question. Much depends on the astrological chart. Some people have a weak chart. Everything falls apart for them, no matter what they do. They experience failures, encounter many obstacles, and don't meet the right people on their path. This means that the planets are poorly positioned, surrounded by squares. But for others, all the planets are well positioned, all in strong positions. Harmonious aspects between them have formed. And then a completely different person emerges. Their life is completely different, easier and more interesting. They engage in something useful, have hobbies. They achieve something in life, achieve a variety of successful deeds. Different charts, different people.
The Keeper returned to the question of the dark-haired beauty and turned his attention to her once again.
It seems that in one family, people can be born, but one is weak and unlucky, while another is strong and determined, achieving something, confidently doing their job. So the astrological chart also strongly influences what kind of people there will be.
The master spoke slowly and loudly enough for the listeners to grasp his thought. He kept visual and energetic contact with the disciple who asked the question. But at the same time, everyone felt that the Great Keeper was speaking directly to them. His voice was so penetrating and powerful. the master continued to quench the spiritual thirst of his disciples. A young man, a professional architect, seeking God through the prism of creativity, inspired by art and the opportunity to create, decided to join the conversation.
Dear Master, tell me, in one song there are these words, when everything is empty in the soul, everything has burned down, and only the will says, go. Is this essentially the same as, give me some sense? Because powers arise to move forward and something begins to happen?
If a person says, everything is empty, everything is burned, they definitely had some ideas about life. They lived by those ideas, and they turned out to be illusory, of course. A person faces reality and may say that everything has collapsed and everything is burned. They are worried, they lament, and if they have some willpower, then this willpower will tell them that there's no need to despair. They need to keep living and not give up, not to back down. Try to become wiser. Try to understand something in this life through the negative experience that has occurred. Then, something may change for that person. This is one of the paths to wisdom, through losses. But if there are no illusions and reality is accepted as it is, if a person is not deluded, doesn't have false beliefs about how they should live, then nothing can burn and be empty for them. Such a person will be prepared in advance for sharp corners and steep turns. They understand that they don't live in paradise and calmly accept any situations. They use these situations for their development, self-awareness, and overcoming their weaknesses, vices, etc. And if we tune in this way, then nothing burns within us. But on the contrary, we begin to develop, improve, grow. In any situations that come to us, grow. Because we tuned in correctly in advance, we saw life correctly in advance.
An adult woman, 45 years old, with a neat haircut, dressed in elegant English classic style, decided to join the conversation. She was very restrained. Her question was well formulated and obviously prepared in advance.
Our dear master, please answer this question. In the books you recommended reading, I read that there should be continuous prayer. How do you cultivate this in yourself correctly to constantly pray in the background? Or should it still be on demand when needed?
You should strive to repeat the prayer or mantra, Om. This is a universal sound because when we repeat such a short prayer or mantra, our mind is clear, free from unnecessary thoughts. It is filled only with the sound, Om. At the same time, concentration develops well. Therefore, constant prayer or mantra, which we repeat, begins to protect us from foolish thoughts or from a sick imagination, from any nonsense that constantly comes to mind. We repeat the mantra, and that's it. Our mind is empty. It is focused on something good. Then we begin to master ourselves, master our mind.
Thank you.
The woman replied promptly and asked an additional question.
And if a person prays for mindfulness, will God himself help him? Or hierarchs? Or spirits? Who will direct, enlighten, and strengthen in this case?
Depending on how a person prays, suppose they read a book that says one should be mindful but don't really understand what it means or how to be mindful. They start praying and asking the higher powers to give them mindfulness, but they themselves don't understand what they're asking for. So they should ask, give me some sense, guide me to understand. If they start praying better, they will send a junior angel to him to guide him to help. If the disciple is more advanced, who knows well what mindfulness is, knows their problems and weaknesses, knows why they could be mindful, then they may send an older angel to help them. So depending on the person's level, on the level of their development, the powers are sent that can help them according to their abilities.
How interesting,
the lady murmured.
Thank you again.
She slightly bowed her head as a sign of deep respect, and the master felt the childish joy and sincere happiness from communicating with him behind her restrained English style. After that, at the end of the hall, several hands appeared, from which the keeper singled out a delicate, fair-skinned girl. She held a shawl, falling from her shoulders and slightly hopped in place to make her hand noticeable.
Great one. I have often heard the phrase, "Everything is the will of God." Can it be concluded from this that a person has no power over themselves and their destiny and cannot make decisions themselves? After all, a person makes dozens of decisions every day that shape their fate. Can it be said that God predicts in advance what choice each person will make? And can it be said that this choice is meaningless if God has already determined what choice and what decision the person will make?
If a person faces a choice, it means that God has given them that choice. When a choice arises, there is a struggle between yes and no. If such a moment comes, there are hesitations and doubts. Decisions are weighed. It means that God has given the person the opportunity to make a choice. Because if there were no choice, there would be no development. Development lies precisely in the fact that we make a choice between degradation and personal growth, between good and bad, between negative emotion and positive. That is, we are constantly in a state of choice, if you think about it. God gives us situations with these choices and sees what choice we will make. If a person tunes in correctly, begins to pray in such a situation, appeals to the higher powers, then in such a situation, they will make the right choice. And if in a situation of choice, they run to ask other foolish people how they should act, then that choice will not be correct. Therefore, choice arises very often. God deliberately gives us the right to decide. Often a person misses these situations, doesn't notice them in the hustle and bustle, makes decisions automatically. But when they notice, when there is a struggle between yes and no, they need to turn to the higher powers. They will guide, and the person will go the right way. And if they don't turn to the higher powers, then they start listening to others and again remain foolish.
Can I ask another question then? Master, there is a belief that God strikes three times with a stick on the head, and it works as three warning bells in life. And if the person didn't hear the first and second time, then the third time some powerful, complex situation happens. And only after that does the soul embark on a spiritual path. Is it true that there are such three points when the soul awakens?
The sage rejoiced in the inner beauty of the disciple, which was just as impressive as her external one, and answered her thus.
Yes, they say, God loves the Trinity. These are called signs. Before any situation, there are always signs. For example, before a situation occurs, any bad or good, there will definitely be signs for a person. Often it comes in the form of dreams, or omens work like black cats. People are given all sorts of signs. If one is attentive to the signs, one can discern them in time and prepare correctly, or even avoid a situation altogether. But sometimes a person seems to see the signs, but doesn't want to accept them, because the goal they're heading towards is very dear to them, and they don't want to give it up. For example, today they had a dream in which devils warned them. Yesterday, a black cat crossed their path. The day before, some other bad thing happened, but tomorrow I'll go anyway and do what I want. What if all this is nonsense and I give up my goal for nothing?
I have an example on this topic, dear master.
The girl once again threw the shawl over her shoulder.
May I tell it?
She asked with an intriguing tone, and having received approval, she began to speak.
So recently this happened with my close friend. For a long time she was trying to pass the driving test, and it was very difficult for her. Her husband advised against it, but she insisted that she set herself a goal and was not going to give up. During practice, it was very difficult for her to attend classes because her boss at work didn't want to let her leave work early, and especially during working hours. From there, she developed a negative attitude towards driving, and in general, it became difficult for her to handle this activity. I told her then that it was a bad sign, but she continued to engage through effort. She managed to pass the driving test only on the sixth attempt. By then, she herself began to think that the spirits were advising her that she didn't need it. But she had already quarreled with everyone who advised her against it, and it was important for her to stand her ground, although it was stupid. As a result, a month later, she got into a minor car accident. She encountered a very rude and insolent person whose car she damaged, and he didn't want to settle the insurance issue, but was striving with all his might to deprive her of her license because he was very principled. They litigated for a long time, and these lawsuits took a lot of her energy and strength. She cried and regretted that it all happened like this. But the stupidest thing is that even now, when the period of her driver's license suspension has expired, she still has difficulties in getting them back. As if everything in her life is set against it, and she continues to resist and pursue her foolish goal. I think this won't end well. Wasn't that minor accident a major warning about danger?
The girl finished speaking, and it was evident that she was seriously concerned about her friend's fate. The keeper saw this and sent the girl energy of comfort and love, which immediately warmed her from the inside and instilled confidence in the goodness and grace of the Most High towards her foolish friend.
In any even minor issue, there can be signs that warn us,
replied the sage.
If we are open, we recognize the signals of higher powers. Tune in. Think whether we should do it or not, whether we need it or not. Then the result will be good. Suppose a young girl is told that she should have children. Society starts to press, to insist. In every conversation, her relatives mention to her that it's time. She needs to give birth. All her friends have already had children. She's the only old maid left. Who will bring her a glass of water in her old age? They create an illusion that she is inadequate if she hasn't given birth to a child. And if she does give birth, then they will insist that she needs a second and third child, so that everything is as it should be. The girl thought about it, prayed to God. She asked if she needed this, if she should follow the dictates of society, or obey her own unreadiness and unwillingness to have a child. And the spirits gave her signs that she didn't need a child right now. They directed her towards spiritual development, inspired her to do good deeds, instead of ruining her life and that of an unwanted child. Often in unfavorable cases, the child is born sick. That's why one must listen to the spirits and follow the right path. And if the signs are bad, then one should not push forward blindly and think, no, I have to give birth. My mother said so. Everyone gives birth. Like all sheep, I will also act in this way, bleating along with everyone else. Then a person gets into trouble because they ignored all the signs and warnings. Therefore, people must understand why certain situations arise. Recognize the signs, listen to the spirits, and choose the right path. And when one realizes in time, then the angels rejoice, God rejoices, and the person follows the right path.
The listeners once again applauded. The sound of applause echoed gratitude throughout the temple. The keeper of knowledge smiled and sent positively charged energy to the disciples. The assistants turned on the recording of the death-defeating mantra so that each person could recall at least one sign given by higher powers that was missed or underestimated, for which timely payment came in the future. It was a very important pause in the conversation, because personal example teaches better than anything else. The sound of one's own rakes, heard at the moment of impact on the forehead, was clearly remembered by everyone, as if it brought an epiphany. When the mantra faded away, The sage was ready to listen to the disciples' questions again. A short man with thick mustaches asked,
"Master, for a prayer to be effective, does a person need to become disappointed in oneself and accept that without God they can do nothing? Indeed, if a person asks God, 'Enlighten me,' does it mean that they cannot do anything themselves, cannot come up with anything on their own?"
"A person should always pray, 'Give me some sense,'"
answered the keeper of knowledge seriously.
"If they do not pray like this, it means that they are stuck on their own version and do not want anything to happen differently, do not want to trust God and do as they are told. The mystery and sacredness of this prayer is that it opens the person's mind. It's like the clouds dispersing above their head, and the person starts to see the sun, although they had been convinced all this time that it was deep night around. The person begins to see the situation clearly and can accurately assess whether they need it or not, see other options and solutions. In such an open state, when there are no clouds over their head, answers and hints from the spirits start to come. But some people are as stubborn as sheep. There are bad signs, and people all around suggest what to do. But they rush headlong, banging their heads against the walls just to prove they are smarter than everyone else, and then they end up at the broken trough. Such smart people are deaf to everything because they only hear themselves. To avoid being such a sheep, one must be open, see the hints and signs, follow them, and not ignore them, and following these hints, start doing something or refrain from doing something."
The next question came from a disciple in an orange mantle. His name was Constantine. Among all the other close disciples, Constantine stood out for his outstanding inclination towards practices. He often lacked patience and perseverance, which hindered him from delving deeper into the truth. He prayed daily for healing this ailment and had succeeded somewhat in his prayers. For over a month, Constantine had been regularly practicing, forcing himself not to jump from one thing to another, but to strictly follow the recommendations given to him by the Master.
"Master, tell me, how should one properly address the spirits?"
he asked.
"We do it every day, but it is difficult to visualize. Maybe we need to imagine some specific spirits or higher beings to connect? Tell me, how can one correctly hear their response after the prayer, 'Give me some sense'? Usually after this prayer, I receive many answers, but it is difficult for me to determine which one will be correct, which one should be accepted."
"Yes, of course, Constantine. It's better to engage in visualization and imagine. You can start by categorizing the spirits. Ask yourself, which spirits are we tuning in to? For example, local spirits. If there is a forest, river, or mountains nearby where the prayer is spoken, it's best to tune in to their patron spirit, the Ayami, who reside there. This will be very effective. They are likely to hear and help. It's also important to consider the mood in which we pray. It may be that we are angry or irritated, wishing ill upon someone, sending a strong emotion of evil in the prayer. Then, demons will come to our aid. They thrive on negative emotions. Demons start giving us bad advice. Thoughts arise to do harm to someone, to annoy them. Demons feed on our anger and return it to us in the form of equally malicious advice. And as a result, you harm yourself more. You must be able to drive them away and not listen, release the anger, and pray another time when in a different, positive mood. Conversely, if we have light elevated emotions, it means light spirits will come to us in this state and respond to us. Therefore, we must pay attention to our emotions, what we ask for, something high or, conversely, low. This is how we attract the corresponding spirits that respond to us. It's also necessary to weigh the answers that come to us. Don't blindly trust everything, but analyze where the answer came from. If there are many answers, choose the brightest, the most elevated one. And if among the answers there are gloomy and negative ones, then demons are directing them to us to derail us from the path. We must monitor the emotions that each answer evokes in us. If it resonates in the heart with light and kindness, if there is a feeling that acting in this way would be right, honest, then this answer has undoubtedly all come from higher powers. But if there is negativity in any answer, or some internal contradiction arises, then it must be rejected, understood that it came from lower spirits, from demons. And if it's elevated, something light, good, it means the angels have come to help.
Following Constantine, another disciple was given the floor. Victor, a fair-haired guy with a large, beautiful ring adorning his hand. Victor often wore rings and bracelets. In moments of stress or anxiety, he found peace by fingering the beads of one of his bracelets. So now, as he asked his question, Victor began to fiddle with the beads as if they were prayer beads.
Master, you said that if you ask in a good state, with positive emotions, then light spirits come. But what should one do if they are experiencing negative emotions, upset about something, saddened, angry at someone, but still want to connect with higher powers to heal themselves in this way, among other methods? How should one approach in this case for the higher spirits to come to you, despite being overwhelmed by negative emotions? Or maybe, should one first do some practice to free themselves from this?
It's good that you asked about this, Victor. Many people experience this, and it will be helpful for everyone to hear. You just need to slightly redirect the essence of your appeal to higher powers. First of all, approach with the thought of helping to free yourself from negativity. Repent about how demons have seized your thoughts. Your mood is bleak. You must ask for the help of angels and light spirits to deal with the demons, with this state. Then help will come, and along with it, relief. Only then can you turn to other prayers. The bad state will go away, and correct decisions will start to come.
Good. I understand, Master. But I have one more question, if you allow. You said that elevated requests are heard by God Himself, the absolute, higher powers, and less significant requests are heard by spirits and angels. But it often happens that a person's desires contradict each other. For example, in my mind, everything gets mixed up during prayer. I think about the high, want to achieve enlightenment, and pray for it. But at the same time, other requests of a mundane nature interfere. In this case, will the spirits and angels fulfill these small requests if they go against the main desire to develop and enlighten?
It depends on what outweighs. A person may desire enlightenment in their mind, but this desire may only exist on a mental level. Such a desire won't be strong. It won't have the corresponding powerful emotion invested in it. But they may have a strong, deep desire to harm someone out of resentment, for example. And then here the emotion will be stronger, and it will prevail. Accordingly, this desire will be heard by the spirits, or demons, first, and may be fulfilled. Demons may even try to amplify this desire and drive the person to complete absorption in negativity and insanity. That's why it's necessary to monitor what prevails in us and act according to the situation. Whatever desire has more emotions invested in it will be fulfilled. But if there are directly opposing desires, one desire, to be a blatant egoist, and the other, to help people, then neither will be fulfilled. These two desires will equally toss the person in different directions and won't allow them to decide where to invest more emotions. In this case, something third must enter the person, some third power, that will help them out of the state of duality where these two powers act. And they cannot do anything.
Understood, Master, thank you. I will remember your words in prayer.
Victor bowed, not letting go of the bracelet, feeling that this bracelet had now become a real object of power for him, because it contained the power of detachment from the Keeper of Knowledge. The next question was asked by a petite girl who came from South Korea, having been studying the Russian language and the teaching of the Great Keeper for a dozen years. Her speech was tinted with an unusual accent, but was nevertheless quite clear and coherent.
Master, today you mentioned that there are spirits of the vital level. Does it mean that spirits are also somehow distributed across the centers? In other words, depending on which center a person is tuned into, those spirits hear them. How does this happen?
Of course. There are seven levels of existence, and naturally, spirits are distributed across these levels. If our desires are the most ordinary, primitive, then these are vital desires, and naturally, the spirits of the vital level will hear them. If one is tuned into the astral plane, then elevated emotions and thoughts arise there, and of course, spirits of the astral level will hear them. That is, at what level the request, prayer, or desire arises, those spirits react to it.
The girl scribbled something, or rather sketched in her flip notebook, and bowed to the master. In her creative consciousness, the prototype of a new painting was born, as Mina, under the guidance of the master, engaged in painting. Meanwhile, the conversation was coming to an end. The keeper indicated readiness to answer two or three more questions before concluding.
Master, I wanted to ask about the prayer, "Give me some sense."
A middle-aged man spoke up from the front rows. He was pleased with his fortunate seating, which allowed him to be closer to the keeper of knowledge and hear his voice as clearly as if it were sounding in his head.
After we pray, God gives us some kind of answer. How should we thank God for this, especially if the gratitude comes from the heart with elevated feelings? Does he expect this gratitude from us?
The greatest gratitude lies in following the advice we received from the Almighty. If God has revealed to us how to act correctly in a particular situation, and we simply expressed gratitude without following his instructions ourselves, this is disappointing for God. We must do as he has commanded us, and therein lies the greatest gratitude and reciprocity. In the decision that he advises us, 100%, we will do something good, bright, divine. Then in our action, there will be God, and this is the best gratitude.
Thank you for the knowledge, great one.
The man hurried to speak.
And I have another question. Master, please tell me, why do we appeal to spirits? Ask them for something of our own. What is the purpose for spirits to help us? Why do spirits listen to our desires and do something for humans?
Because that's how everything is arranged.
The sage made a light gesture with his hands, emphasizing both the genius and simplicity of God's plan.
Spirits exist on their level. If they are angels, then helping people in noble aspirations is their direct purpose. This is what they live for. This is their main task. And they see no point in their existence without that task. And demons, on their level, also have a main goal, to manifest themselves through people and to do evil. That's why they tune themselves to listen to base human desires more often, trying to cause harm. Demons manifest all their negativity through people, so it's important for them to listen to incoming requests. The more negative these requests, the better, juicier it is for demons. They try to attack, tune people to do bad things, to cause trouble to other people. The more people they catch with this, the better it is for them. This is what they live for, that's all. That's how everything is arranged.
The last question in this session was unexpectedly asked from the corner of the hall, where the keeper's assistant stood by the column. The woman's name was Natalia. Her voice was soft and pleasantly filled the room.
Master, before my first seminar, the conductor of power said such a phrase to me. There is the path of your life, the one you must walk. Fulfill your purpose, realize your talents and abilities. And there is a parallel path. It is mediocre and pale compared to the true one. And you are now on the parallel one. This phrase stuck with me and somehow touched me, motivated me to figure it out. And I went to my first seminar, subsequently met you. I would like to understand this better. After all, essentially, you could say this to every person, that they have two paths, and only when they meet the Master will they switch from the parallel to the true path of their life.
The Keeper of Knowledge smiled as he looked at his disciple, sharing with her the joy that she is here, not somewhere on the parallel path. And addressing all the disciples in the hall, he pronounced,
"There is always a choice, to degrade and decline, to live a mediocre life like the one parents lived, or to embark on the bright path, which leads a person to happiness and development, so that they find a bright, joyful existence of a completely different level. And naturally, a person should make exactly that choice, if they are wise. But if they were just an insect in their past life, then they won't understand this. They are sure that to live means to satisfy basic needs, sleep, eat, drink, and so on. These are their main goals, and they see no point in anything else, anything higher. They have these base goals, and they understand no other. A bug, by its nature, cannot grasp this, even if enlightened people tell them. People are just at different levels of development, that's all."
On this note, the Great Keeper of Knowledge rose from his seat. One of the disciples raised one leg like a flamingo and folded their hands over their chest. Seeing this, the Master laughed heartily. An extraordinarily warm atmosphere spread throughout the hall along with his laughter. Some listeners hastened to do the same, demonstrating that they are ready to practice his teaching right here without saying goodbye. The rest began to applaud, and the joyful sounds of shared happiness did not cease for a moment as grateful disciples bid farewell to their dear master on his way out of the hall. Thus ended another meeting with the Great Keeper of Knowledge, filled with surpassed expectations, holy grace, and true knowledge. A meeting that overturns understanding of the world, making you feel like a hovering flamingo in every subsequent moment.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.